This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
All politics this week. I kind of thought when I scheduled this session we'd be talking about the Democratic presidential debate, but I think that got preempted by these impeachment hearings, which have been absolutely riveting stuff has come out, but I think it's been buried in full days of boredom. You kind of get the point very quickly, and then it gets beaten to death. But among other things that happened, the real big question is are the rats starting to jump off the ship? And I see, you know, Gordon Sondland was a Trump guy, gave him $1 million, or he's a Republican hanger on, gave Trump $1 million, finally got his ambassadorship. He was given money before that, but this is the one that paid off. He goes full John Dean on the thing. He says the White House plot was quid pro quo. Everybody was in the loop. That includes Giuliani. That includes Pompeo. That implicates Trump's. He adds new emails and evidence, and that's just the beginning of what unfolds this time. So
he even says we were following orders of the president.
Yeah. Well, you haven't introduced your esteemed guest. You know, it's just these voices. You're so excited to go into this, man.
I was going there, and you guys jumped in.
Yeah, identity crisis. Come on, help me out here.
Voices ought to be very familiar. Chuck Coughlin, Tom Ryan. This is our regular A team here on All Things Politics.
Yeah, it's a low bar, but we're here,
and we continue to crawl under.
Yeah,
it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, it's not a high bar to begin with, right? So we're here to talk.
Is this kind of the beginning? My question to both of you, is this the beginning of the unraveling? I saw Sondland, who came back and revised his earlier. He had a flash of better memory, I think, after consulting with a lawyer who said, if you want to stay out of jail for perjury, you better clean this up.
I think there are two things here. First off, yes, Mr. Sondland realized that the career Foreign Service officers who had no political orientation one way or the other had implicated him deeply into this whole process. And he had a decision point. He could either continue on with the administration line, no quid pro quo, or he could come out and come clean. And there have been a lot of comparisons to John Dean, but I think even John Dean was cleaner than what Sondland had come out with. But
well, they were trying to John Dean, the commonality is when John Dean figured out that they were trying to pin the whole thing on him, that's when he flipped. He wasn't an angel. He wasn't at the center of it.
I think
he was at the periphery.
I think what we were talking about earlier, Sondland saw the path of future Trump defenders or past Trump defenders and where that's gone.
Yeah, Gates, Manafort. Yeah.
The one that was Stone who was convicted this week.
Right. Yeah. And so I think, you know, and as Tom said, career Foreign Service officers are trained to take notes. That's what they're trained to do. Yeah. You could clearly see there was, there's a contemporaneous record of everything that goes on. The testimony last week from the career officer was he was sitting next to Sondland while the president was talking to him on the phone. He was talking so loudly that Sondland moved the phone away from his ear so he clearly could identify the president's voice and the substance of the conversation. And that's set the president off into orbit again into Twitter sphere. And, you know, because he's concerned, you have now a literally firsthand account of the conversation that is backed up by Sondland's testimony.
Here's, I think, the problem for the president is you got about 8 guys involved in this. If everybody keeps their mouth shut, they probably survive. But when there's the first break.
Oh, yeah.
The second one's a whole lot easier than the first.
Well, as the rule goes, the only way you can keep a conspiracy quiet between 3 people is if 2 of them are dead.
Which leads to another problem.
Yeah, Mr. Trump is learning that this whole process is – I think he's kind of surprised, and he's expressed this before, Trump, that people take notes. He got upset with his attorneys for taking notes. Lawyers are trained to take notes just like the Foreign Service officers. Mm-hmm. When I do a deposition, even though there's a videographer and a court reporter there, I still pull out my notepad and I take notes. for a variety of reasons.
Well, I used to tell people that work for me, I said, there's two kind of people. There's the kind of people who write stuff down, and there's the kind of people who forget.
Yeah,
there ain't no other kind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this has been an interesting week to see the Foreign Service officers. We saw Paul Volcker again. We saw Sondland again. And I don't think that Volcker and Sondland are, even though they've now come more clean, I still don't think they're completely clean yet. And I really think that Volcker has done a lot to damage what was otherwise a very stellar career by becoming part of the three amigos, Rick Perry, Volcker, and Sondland in this this sordid affair to pressure the Ukraine. It's very sad. I mean, here's Ukraine. They finally elect a reformist candidate, Volodymyr.
And they were corrupt.
And they were.
They were.
Yes, yeah.
Probably are. Let's be clear. I mean, no. You know, well, it still exists.
You don't, no.
It's not changing a culture.
Well, you have,
right?
I think, a genuinely reformist president.
You have an opportunity.
Who inherits a completely corrupt system.
And,
yes.
Well, and they just elected a mostly reformist parliament. Yep. And one of the very first things they passed was now an anti-corruption court. Think about the fact that you have to even create something like an anti-corruption court. But here's this country trying to get away from its oligarchy, corrupt past, and to become more of a country like the United States, a rule of law country, and then to have our president say, I need a little quid pro quo here. And that has been verified now in multiple sources.
Yeah, and I think what most people don't gather, the gravity of this situation, back to the corruption point, I think it slips by most people because they cannot put themselves in the shoes of the Ukrainians or a foreign service officer that's in the Ukraine going, cheering for this nascent government to have a chance. And then you have a president that interjects his own personal political vendetta into their world, then compromising them, almost inviting them to participate in the American election system, which as we know, if that happens, you become Russia, right?
Yeah.
And that polarizes or politicizes what should be a healthy foreign relationship. And creates a problem for the Ukraine because it becomes this partisan entity then.
We have a process in the United States to investigate Americans doing foreign corrupt practices. We have a Department of Justice. We have an FBI. We have intelligence agencies that can investigate and pass that information back along.
And these are the kind of people that are coming forward and testifying right now. They're people who are nonpartisan, who may have beliefs, but they learn to sublimate those personal beliefs and to do their job by the books.
Correct. And if there is a reasonable belief that somebody, whether it's a political opponent or not, has done something corrupt in another country, then the process is to turn it over to the Department of Justice and let the process follow through there.
And be handled by career prosecutors.
Correct. And we don't go knocking on Italy's door, China's door, England's door, Ukraine's door and saying, hey, will you do our investigation for us?
Right.
Well, I got to really have – where I get the greatest sympathy, when you think of the new president of the Ukraine in conversation with the president – his position is probably most analogous to a guy who's just had his family kidnapped.
Yes.
And he's talking to somebody who can do something to get your family released and ask for a favor. I mean, the dance he had to do and what he did for a while was delay it, to his credit. But you knew that eventually he was going to have to capitulate because the country's very survival was potentially at stake.
As David Holmes testified this week, he said that President Zelensky still felt pressured by the White House, even after he received the aid.
By the situation, by the fact that his country would continue to have independence only on the basis of getting aid from us because they got Russian soldiers on their eastern border.
They got a hot war going.
Yeah, but we'll be back. I'll go to Chuck first when we return after the break in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
I remember, I think it was probably with this group. I made some observations months and months ago. And I said, basically, I think there's four institutions that ultimately can be the salvation of this country. And I think you've seen about three of them come to play in this. The professional military establishment, number one. The upper level professional civil service that we see Foreign service is very, very much a part of that.
Yeah. Yep.
But I'm talking about the professionals who are committed to mission.
Yeah.
And in the case of foreign service, it's the foreign policy of this country, but it also applies to the EPA and other kinds.
National Security Council.
All of that is. What which you can deride as the deep state.
That's what they call it. The deep state
is what keeps our country running, even if we are headless at the top. Number three is journalism, basically professional journalists to keep people informed of what's going on. And number four is an independent judiciary. I think we've seen three of those four actively involved in what we've had so far. Chuck, you were going to comment on one of these in context here.
There is the last 20 years has been a continuous assault on the credibility of all those institutions, not only on the left but on the right. They've both done it. And so we're reaping the whirlwind of that narrative that we've invested in, the quote unquote corruption that has dominated the news cycles from in this president's cycle of the corrupt the intelligence agencies. He takes them on the foreign service, the State Department, at any level of EPA, any level that he doesn't like, he personally assaults them. And that's followed on a narrative. I mean, I trace it even back into the Obama administration, as I said, when you had Eric Holder and those guys running fast and furious here in Arizona, and then threw the local prosecutors under the bus out here and claimed executive privilege, or back to executive privilege on or executive power when Obama, which is now going to go in front of the Supreme Court, is that he used his federal power to claim a legal status for people who are not here legally, the DACA kids. I'm sympathetic to that. I get that. But the challenge is to make Congress work. And Congress doesn't work anymore because everybody focused on short-term political objectives rather than the long-term game of what America's role is in the world. I heard several candidates, we'll get to it eventually, in the Democratic presidential debate last night talk about American values. Mm-hmm. I would love to see a poll about what people think American values are these days, because I really don't know. I know what mine are.
Broader point about democracy, I think where people don't really fully get the thing. Democracy, everybody votes, is really only a small part of democracy. If you don't have an independent press, then everybody votes is a meaningless. In Russia, if Putin controls the media and the information that people get, then the vote is not very significant. If you don't have an independent judiciary to say to the elected official, no, you are elected, you're an executive, you have certain powers, but they are not unlimited. A judiciary that can say, no, that's beyond the scope of what you can do, then essentially anybody can become an autocrat.
Yeah.
And the beauty of our system is we've had all of those things working in tandem. And usually, in almost every case, when something gets out of kilter, one of the other institutions comes in and clips its
wings. But you have a president now who thinks he's larger than the office, that the office is him.
Not clear in his case he really understands.
He does. I think he thinks I'm with Chuck on that one.
He is larger than the office. I mean, he thinks he's more important than the office.
He's totally adopted Bill Barr's unitary executive that I wield all power. Yeah. It's the Nixonian idea of if the president does it, it can't be illegal.
There was a letter to the editor in the Republic last week to that very point. Well, if the president says it's so, it's so. You're serving for that guy. They were taken on the lieutenant colonel who testified. Well, that speaks to the professionalism of the military, that they have a right and an obligation and a duty to report misdeeds. Well, the article clearly said, well, if the president says it's so, it's so, which is not what the country has been based on.
No, we are the rule of law, not the rule of man. We are not a monarchy. We are a constitutional republic, and that's the challenge. And the greatest defense to all of this is the judiciary. In the beautiful movie Judgment at Nuremberg, the final scene where Spencer Tracy, the prosecutor, is talking to Burt Lancaster, the German judge. The German judge says to him, "You have to understand something. We didn't see this coming." And Spencer Tracy's beautiful response was, "You saw it coming the first time you sentenced, you knowingly sentenced an innocent man." I'm concerned about our judiciary and the state of the judiciary. It has been highly politicized, again, by both sides.
Yeah.
And I'm deeply concerned about whether or not the judiciary has the power and the will to stand up to the abuses of the Constitution that we're seeing.
There's an atrophy in the entire governing system of when one branch begins to fail, and clearly the congressional, the legislative branch is failing. Has been failing for a long time
because it's locked.
It's locked in, do in the partisan atmosphere of refuse to compromise. And so when that happens, it puts undue political burdens on the rest of the branches of government, and then they begin to act in ways that aren't healthy. And that's where we are as a country.
Yeah, I agree. We'll have to talk about why the two parties are so polarized right now. That's a very important analysis to undertake.
Wow. When we return.
Appropriate music.
that's why I picked it.
Slip sliding away, baby.
That's the question of the hour when we return in the Think Tank in just a moment after the break.
I know a man. He came from my hometown. He wore his passion for his woman like a thorny crown. He said, Dolores, I live in fear. My love for you is so overpowering, I'm afraid that I will disappear. Slip sliding away.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
All right. We are here with Chuck Coughlin and Tom Ryan. We're going to do one more session here talking about the whole impeachment business. And then in our final segment, we will talk about the Democratic debate, which took place this week. There is an election going on and it's underway. But just to get closer on this, where do you see this? We see some pretty damning evidence come out. A lot of the initial Trump positions there's been retreat from. Yeah, okay, he was involved. But kind of their position had been, yeah, okay, I broke into the Watergate and whatever, but so what?
That's been the defense so far for the Republicans. And it's a bit comical because every morning for these hearings this week, Mr. Nunes has been allowed to make a statement, and then the witnesses that get called and testify in front of him testify exactly to the opposite of what he's been saying.
But a lot of the Nunes objections have been to process. You know, you didn't vet this correctly, or you didn't. They haven't challenged the facts.
And not only have they not challenged the facts, the Democratic Party has continually maintained, look, if you have evidence to the contrary that contrary to what we're bringing forth, please bring it forward to us.
Yeah, and they want their idea of bringing counter evidence is to subpoena Hunter Biden.
Hunter Biden had nothing to do with the investigation into Burisma or himself or the withholding of aid to the Ukraine. So you ask a great question: How is this going to move the dial? What's going to happen here? First off, I do believe that articles of impeachment will be voted out of the House and it will not be bipartisan. I will be surprised if anything other than Representative Amash, who's now an independent, formerly a Republican, I'll be very surprised if any Republicans sign on.
Maybe Will Hurd.
Maybe, but I would give about a 5% chance to. I may be wrong on that.
But the point is, it's going to be partisan.
It'll be very, yeah.
Question to both of you about that.
It'll be framed that way.
And if it looks like a loser that's going to die in the Senate, the problem with voting out articles of impeachment is you turn over the timetable to Mitch. Maybe Nancy Pelosi steps in at that point and says, look, that's going to be a losing cause. Maybe what we need to do is just vote some censure
The exit path here would be to say we have an election now in less than a year. The American public is going to have an opportunity to voice their opinion. My colleagues and my caucus feel very strongly that he has broken the law, that he is above the law.
And but I'm not. I've talked to the Senate leader, and the Senate leader has assured me that there's not going to be any Republican votes in the Senate for that, mm-hmm. which means it's a dead letter drawer. So we're going to censure him and let the American public move forward.
And the censure language could say we find convincing
all of this.
He's guilty of all this stuff. He's impeachable. He's convictable.
But we're not going to pull the trigger.
And that is kind of the Republican argument right now. It's too close to the election.
And you could say there's more important issues on the table here and steer this ship back to what I think the American people really
I think
care
that
about
could happen, don't you?
Is the state of the economy, the state of the deficit, the state of health care in this country, the state serving our educational needs in this country, the infrastructure needs of this country, the energy situation in this country, the climate change in this in this
country, budget. I mean,
the budget situation. There's all kinds of things that we just are not being addressed.
Sounds like you think it could happen. I don't think Tom does.
No,
I'm not sure it will. I'm not sure it will.
I think that the House votes out articles of impeachment that they will be for the extortion and bribery of the Ukraine over the military aid in exchange for announcing an investigation. And that's interesting. They weren't actually pushing for the investigation. They're just pushing for an announcement, according to all the testimony that's now.
Well politically, that's all he needed. If there was an announcement of an investigation, then Trump could use it in the campaign to basically equate.
Correct. But I think that goes to the corrupt intent of the president mm-hmm. then, rather than a serious intent to find an actual investigation.
No.
But I think what's going to happen is they're going to append a series of obstruction of justice articles to the articles mm-hmm. of impeachment. I think Pelosi will send it up to the Senate. And here's the deal. It's the Senate that decides what to do with it. And if they find – they may find, you're right, he did those things and we are going to censure him and let the people decide. That's where it gets decided, is in the Senate after the trial. McConnell has said there will be a trial.
Yep.
Now,
he's told all the members that to block their calendars for January and February, and
correct.
They're not allowed to leave town.
Correct.
Because they'll be sitting as a jury.
Interestingly, who does that help in the presidential? Mayor Pete
drives,
and Joe Biden
right,
are okay.
It drives everybody that's running up the
it was
wall.
The Senate.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's an interesting thing because, as you can see, you have to know the rule about the rules. And he sets the rules. McConnell does, just like the way Schiff has set the rules in his intelligence committee. By the way, there's still one more committee this has to go to.
It's got to go to judiciary, right?
Right. It's got to go to the House Judiciary, where they will actually review the evidence now, draft the articles of impeachment, and then it goes to the full House for a vote.
For the record, I think Tom's right. I think it will. She'll be under immense pressure to pull the trigger on this mm-hmm. and to have the House vote on articles of impeachment. I think that will happen. I was purely expressing an opportunity be to steer this off that road.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's important. I mean, we had a president that lied under oath, and he was impeached for that.
Mm-hmm.
We had a president that obstructed justice on a minor burglary where he should have just let it all go.
Well, there were some other things.
I know. But here's the point. If we are a country that believes in the rule of law, then the impeachment moves forward.
Yeah.
And the issue here for the House and the Senate is somehow he has to be held accountable. Now, maybe in the election he gets voted out. I'm not so sure that – I know there's a lot of people that say, oh, he's done now.
No, he is not done.
He is not done.
We got maybe a minute here, Chuck. I want to get to this question. What happens to the Republican Party after the dust settles on this?
Well, I mean, in a second term, if he is reelected, which I don't – I will be reelected.
Even beyond that. Post-Trump, what happens?
That is a hell of a question.
I think it's a he's a term limited guy, and
well,
I believe
1 year
the party
or 1 year or 5 year from
right,
now it will be post-Trump.
I believe there will be an organized effort to talk about the deficit because that is a very conservative mm-hmm. issue that should be of real import to the entire country and to our financial system. I think it will be a really important thing to talk about the effects of free trade mm-hmm. with dictatorial
regimes
like
Republican article of faith.
Like China, that have now used their market influence mm-hmm. to be able to undermine our own economy in ways and the effects that will have in their own country. And then we have infrastructure issues and healthcare issues here in this country that will continue to be an issue. And if the Republican Party wants to be a party of the majority, they're going to have to figure out a way to have that conversation. Mm-hmm. And it's apart from Trump.
Here's the problem. It is no longer the Republican Party. It is the party of Trump.
Right. Well, that's why my question was posed as post-Trump.
Yes. Right. Because that's the problem.
Because I think I know what happens in a second Trump administration. You sort of continue what we have right now.
Yeah, but there'll
level.
Be voices. I mean, there'll be growing
a little
voices.
Bit more independence. Yes. Yeah,
where the hell's been the Tea Party on the deficit that's been built?
Well, as Rush Limbaugh said, that was a phony issue from the day one.
Oh, you what, know.
The
thanks.
Deficit or the Tea Party?
The deficit.
Or Rush Limbaugh.
Okay, we will return. We'll talk Democratic presidential politics, the debate, and the like when we return in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Absolutely no shortage of politics this week. We had to cut off these Irishmen here from talking about the whole impeachment business to leave just a little bit of time.
He took away our whiskey.
Yeah. I got to tell you, the most impressive moment of the debate, Amy Klobuchar got $17,000 in contributions from former boyfriends. That has to be unprecedented. I'm impressed.
Yeah, I thought the Buttigieg's takedown of Tulsi Gabbard on the foreign policy on the Mexico and Syria issue was a classic takedown.
Hey Chuck,
that showed that he does have the substance to throw bombs.
It is it's time for you and I to share a plate of crow because it's on tape here in an earlier show where we were both very dismissive. It was like, oh, he's bright, but comma, of course he doesn't have a prayer. I think it's time to retract that one.
No, I'm in a full retreat on that. Yeah. I think he's got real momentum in Iowa. I think mm-hmm. he's got a real strong chance. He came across as a fresh face, a fresh mm-hmm. voice, somebody who he's not from the swamp. You know, people were banging on him yesterday around my office, and they were talking. Well, you know, he's the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. He's got more executive authority than anybody else on that stage.
No, how about the?
Because they've all been legislators, right?
He's up against a game show.
I mean, he had more. He has more executive authority than Obama did Obama was running for president.
I've been mulling that, and I think that experience per se is overrated. Experience defined as you held certain positions as opposed to your level of knowledge and your judgment. And you can get that from study.
Yeah. I also think you get it from attracting the right people to you. I mean,
the president does not have to be the smartest guy in the room.
No.
They just have to be smart enough to listen to him.
I worked for a very fine law firm for about 11 years, and it dawned on me that the talent of the lead trial lawyer wasn't so much that he was the world's greatest trial lawyer, but he did recognize great talent, and he surrounded himself with very fine lawyers, right, paralegals, partners, and things like that. Me excluded, obviously, but that was a tremendous talent mm-hmm. to have. Look, the problem that's going on right now in the Trump administration is he doesn't have the people that provide him the guardrails, and so when you look at a guy
he cuts him off at the knees and fires him
exactly. Yeah. And so you look at a guy like Buttigieg and or any of the other ones that are up on the stage, if they are willing to hire the right people and put the people in place that will give them the appropriate guardrails, that can be a very successful administration.
I think make another point about the Buttigieg candidacy. It's precipitated upon the demise, I think, of Joe Biden.
It perceived. I mean, my problem with the Buttigieg candidacy in going that far is, you know, yeah, I believe he has momentum in Iowa. He's a Midwestern mayor. He's a white guy, you know, so that's pretty much Iowa, right? Mm-hmm. He's got a good education. He's a Rhodes Scholar. He's a military veteran. And there's a lot of boxes that are getting checked there. You know, you're going to go to, you know, New Hampshire next, right? It's got to be one of the Bernie or Warren show there.
They're neighbors. Yeah. If they can't carry that, that's a problem.
That's a home game for them.
You know,
but then you change, and Super Tuesday looms with the beginning of a bunch of primaries in the South, where the biggest constituency of the Democratic Party is the African American community. And they that the African South Baptists in the South, I think, are going to struggle with Pete's sexuality. I think that's going to be a problem for him.
I thought he's addressed that consistently.
He's trying
as good as he could. And in his appeal to the black voters is this: I may not, you know, have your experience, but I have experience.
I have experienced the same
discrimination. And having been discriminated against because of who I am. And the question is, can ultimately he sell that?
If Justice Kennedy hadn't signed off on the 5-4 decision, the Obergefell versus Hodges back in 2015, would we see a Pete Buttigieg on the stage right now? And he can make that case.
He can, and he's probably the best scripted guy, best knowledgeable guy of the Bible.
I think he's more knowledgeable than scripted.
Scriptural.
Knowledge.
He is deeply embedded in that. So he can use that very narrative that Christ spoke to and say, I have experienced oppression, but I'm humbly asking you, for your vote. I believe he can narrate that successfully, but it's hard road.
And they don't know him. I don't think his 0% among black voters is not that they're hostile to him. I think it's mostly they don't know.
And in the meantime, you're going to have the Biden machine pumping the tires on that all the way through that Super Tuesday vote. And this fear that they're going to nominate somebody that is going to lose to the president.
Here's the thing about this is a double Super Tuesday. It's because it's got California.
Right.
And it's heavier loaded than it ever was before. So money matters. And of the top candidates who has the least amount of money is Joe Biden.
Right. One of the interesting things I'm seeing, too, is Kamala Harris is not getting the traction in the black community that I think she thought she was going to get.
Yep.
I earlier this week, I watched a segment on the Trevor Noah show, and they did it was clever and funny interview of five African-Americans in Atlanta. And they asked him, who do you support? And one of the gentlemen raised his hand and said Trump, and everybody turned and laughed at him. But they asked all five of them, he was throwing out names, Kamala Harris, and every one of them said no.
Yeah.
And they asked why, and they said because of her stance with the police. Mm-hmm. So
she's a prosecutor. That was her background.
Her aggressive prosecution stance in California precedes her out there in Atlanta,
the
Georgia.
One I thought that was interesting. I've been surprised did not get some traction. Because I think at every one of the debates he's been
Don't tell me Tulsi.
No. Absolutely eloquent is Booker.
Yeah.
He's doing better.
He's still at 2%. He's going, after every debate, I wonder, is there – by the way, Chuck and I privately communicated, this stage is too full.
Oh,
but the problem I think with that is who performed the best – in this debate, with the exception, Buttigieg, were some of the lower tier candidates. Getting them off in December is going to be hard.
I thought Harris actually performed well last night. I thought she did very well last night. And so
Senator Klobuchar, likewise.
Klobuchar did well as
Booker.
I have a hard time listening to him.
Really?
I do. He comes across as a politician. He comes across, when he was going after Biden before on the criminal justice stuff, Biden pops him back when he was mayor saying, well, you didn't really bother you when you were mayor, and he gets caught in some of that hyperbole just to me occasionally. But he doesn't come across as a substantively thoughtful as either Harris or Buttigieg or for that matter, Klobuchar.
Funny, I kind of have that gut reaction to Harris rather than Booker.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you
I'm going to tell you.
Both of them are at 2%.
So. I still think Joe Biden pulls it out and is the eventual Democratic nominee. And I hear the criticisms. He's a gaffe machine. He's playing around with the Wall Street crowd as opposed to the Main Street crowd. But I think the Democratic Party, as crazy as it can be sometimes, I think they're going to come back and say, he's what we know.
Joe is safe.
He's what is comfortable. And then I'm going to throw a third rail at you, which is he's the one that probably scares Trump the most. Why would Trump go after him in the Ukraine?
Yeah.
And that is
he made that case last night. He made that case in the debate last week.
Yeah, it's a power. That's a Trump in his effort to destroy Biden is probably doing more to help him at this point because he's underscoring Biden's point. I'm the one that frightens him. I'm the one that could most likely beat him, and he knows it. That's a great narrative, and it covers a lot of the
– It is, but he's running in a primary where you're in deep water on a lot of issues with constituencies that want to hear thoughtful responses to the things that are – the issues that are of concern to them. And I don't feel that energy from him. Hear that.
First off, that whole I'm really bothered by the whole debate construct that we have with the Democratic debates right now. Having 10, 12 people on the stage is unhelpful. Watch Joe Biden as a retail campaigner. Watch Joe Biden on the streets. Watch Joe Biden in the rallies because he is a hell of a retail campaigner. People don't remember what's on those debates. Not everybody watches MSNBC or CNN. What they remember is seeing him in the streets, the friendliness, the warmth, and things like that. And I do believe that's where he's going to win. Same thing with Trump. Trump was a disaster in the debates. I thought Hillary –
Though he commanded – he had stage presence every debate.
But he if you watch him at these rallies, these the 33% that are never going to leave him – the grandchildren of Ev Meekum voters.
never in doubt.
Never in doubt, never baby, in doubt. No matter what.
Frequently wrong, but never in doubt.
if he shot someone on Fifth Avenue, there was probably a good reason for it, and I would want to hear it. You know, that's their mindset.
Well, but there's a giant segment of the electorate, back to the things we were talking about earlier in the program, that have no confidence in the institutions, and Trump represents the anti-institutional vote, and the power of one.
It's the tribal element that is essentially, you are of
ourselves.
My tribe. I identify with you. Ergo, therefore, after that, nothing you say can matter.
And the Democratic Party has fed that with the narrative of, you know, the diversity, you know, the rainbow coalition back to the day. Yeah. And not about all of us. The essential element of America is we're all equal. Right. That's the law. That's what we were supposed to, that's our ideal. But that's not what we speak to anymore in the Democratic Party.
We need to get back to this is the rule of law, not the rule of man.
Yeah.
We can get there. We'll be OK. The center will hold.
Well,
it's that's a tough one to convince people on when they don't like the way the law is going.
Go to church on Sundays and yoga about 3 or 4 times a week. Get through the week. I don't know what everybody else does, but that's my trick.
Okay, we'll be back again. Chuck Coughlin, Tom Ryan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week on another topic in the Think Tank.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Call them on with a song.